Americas, live and underway here on ESPN. Alongside Hercules Gomez, I'm Sebastian Salazar for episode 346. Herc, as always, pleasure to be with you. What you got on under that jacket over there on the West Coast?
Oh, it's a little Hugo, you know, your boy. By the way, is he coming down this weekend for a Clásico?
I believe so. I believe our good friend and colleague, Hugo Sanchez, is going to be in the mix for our El Clásico coverage here on ESPN. Very excited. Can I give a shout out to San Francisco City SC? They're out of USL League 2, Herc. They are the oldest supporter-owned soccer club in America, fully operated by supporter volunteers. How about that?
Take that.
That's grassroots, baby.
Oh. It looks nice. It's sweet. Where'd you get that?
Thank you. Well, I got it in the mail, and they sent a couple for you as well. Some large that they were sending your way. I'll get you those next time I'm out in California. Coming up, Herc, in this edition of Football Americas, we got Ali Krieger going to walk us through the NWSL weekend that was. And we have the coach, Herc, of one of the best stories in all of American soccer, Santiago López. He's the manager for El Farolito SC. Yes, the club that's named after a burrito joint out in California. It's running things in the U.S. Open Cup. They got a game against the Oakland Roots, actually.
That's right.
Tomorrow night. So we're going to preview that with Santiago López. But let's start in the Midwest, Herc, where there were huge crowds. Not for American football. Nah. For Lionel Messi at Arrowhead. Over 72,000 in attendance, including Patrick Mahomes, who got a handshake pregame. Lionel Messi was doing his usual thing in this, Herc. 51st minute, a golazo from outside the area.
Yeah, really enjoyed this one. It's Patrick Mahomes' fault. He said, go out there, have some fun. That's what he's doing. Messi, one touch, second touch, sets it up, and then boom! Look at him celebrate, too. He looked like he really wanted a good performance, and he got it.
Always steps up when the crowd is at its largest. The showman with the goal there, that made it 2-1 in the second half. He also had a beautiful assist to Diego Gomez for an assist in the first half. Herc, what'd you make of the latest Messi masterclass?
Wow, we couldn't afford the rest of the highlights. What's going on there?
Listen, I don't know.
Listen, man, it's 3 days too late is my first initial reaction.
Yes.
After seeing
Where was this when it mattered? Where was this against Rayados, right?
Well, hold on. And you know what it makes it look, Seb? And I don't know if you're going to agree with me or not, but oftentimes we see Messi and friends play in Major League Soccer, and you're like, they look like the Harlem Globetrotters. Guess what the opposition looks like then? The Washington Generals. And that's the thing here. You go from playing against a team like Rayados, who in CONCACAF is star-studded, in their house, where the fans aren't so welcoming, because they weren't welcoming. They were actually sort of hostile. And you could see the videos pre-hand. You could see the videos on post where they're stepping on the jersey. It's not a nice environment where they're welcoming and they're saying, go have some fun, Messi. Mm-hmm. And I thought I was going to see the angry Messi. That's the Messi I thought I was going to bet on. That's the Messi. Mentally, I said, I'm betting on this guy showing up. And maybe it's not all on him because you can't do everything alone. But it sure looked like it this game. The assist he gave David Gomez was... Messi was Messi, Barcelona Messi. Prime Messi, the vision right there. That's the Messi you envision every time he steps on the field. And that's what he gave us 70,000 plus in Kansas City. By my initial reaction, 3 days too late.
Yep. Because there was none of it against Rayados, right? It wasn't like there were close moments or anything. There were two half chances and he scuffed them both badly. Here, aside from the goal, aside from the assist, there was so much Messi magic. It's almost like he didn't use any of it against Rayados. He saved it up all here for Sporting Kansas City. My primo, Herc, had a live bet here right around the 60th minute. Now, some of that is Sporting Kansas City. They have a terrible second half record. But a lot of that is just knowing you got Messi on the field. You got Suarez, who eventually gets the game winner off a Sporting Kansas City mistake, actually. Here's the thing, man.
Yeah, it was a big mistake as well.
It was a big mistake in that moment. As far as Inter Miami is concerned, it's a great win, fine, whatever. But Sporting Kansas City is not a particularly good team. And so we see from Messi with Inter Miami is he's not just the difference between winning and losing, which is razor thin. He's the difference between good team, Herc, and frankly, a bad team, a team that's not really going to compete against the rest of MLS. And so Messi looks great in this game, but the roster, the team, the cake under him is really... for me, starting to crumble. And some of that is something else that happened in this game, which is Jordi Alba getting hurt. And it would look like a muscular injury. It did not look like something that was going to be a 1 or 2 week thing. And again, you have to question the wisdom of taking this team on this wild, insane, worldwide preseason tour. And we've got guys picking up muscular injuries. And the reality, Herc, is it's not going to be Sporting Kansas City in the playoffs. It's going to be better teams. And so if Messi's not at this version of Messi, or if Jordi Alba's hurt, this team is not going to advance when it matters. The good thing for Inter-Miami is they don't really have anything that matters until October. The way MLS is set up right now, they can chill until October.
They can't chill until October. Messi's going to go to Copa America, and then you're going to have Leagues Cup. Major League Soccer can...
They already got Leagues Cup. What do they need? What do they need Leagues Cup again for? Hold He's on. Already got it.
Hold on. I'm not talking about Messi. Messi doesn't need anything. Messi's the greatest of all time. He doesn't improve anything. Messi ends his career today. There's no debate about him being the greatest of all time in my eyes. Major League Soccer, MLS, can ill afford to have another humiliation on their hands, this time on home soil in Leagues Cup. He's going to be in Copa America. We know how much he loves playing for Argentina. Luis Suarez, maybe with Uruguay. There are going to be some other players who maybe may have some of their own things going on. But when they get together, if they are humiliated again at the hands of Mexican opposition, this time on home soil, that's a terrible black eye. You can maybe make an argument for the timing of this tournament, the CONCACAF Champions Cup, and playing against teams like Monterrey in Monterrey, etc. But when it's your home soil, when it's you who has the advantage because they're coming into their season, it's their preseason type of deal, you can't have that on your hands.
I'm looking at the standings here. Inter-Miami are first in the Eastern Conference. And you say, okay, that's great. But if we actually look at the numbers, they've won 4 of their 9 games. They're winning less than half the games, Herc. This team is not yet performing, I don't think, at the level that even they reached last year, right? When Lionel Messi was literally walking off a plane.
No, I think they're the same. I think they're the same, Seb. They're the same team. I think, if anything, they've gotten better because you're seeing more from... I mean, he didn't have Luis Suarez.
I think on paper
year.
They've gotten better, but everybody's hurt.
Well, fine, but that's what we saw last year. That's exactly what we saw last year. We saw Messi. We've seen this movie before. That's why I picked them to win a 7-game tournament, a CONCACAF Champions Cup, a Leagues Cup. That's why I said if they were potentially going to play the Open Cup, that would be where they would do their damage. I didn't, and I still don't, envision a long 34-game season with all these tournaments and then Copa America in the summer and what Major League Soccer entails and the travel and their preseason we just mentioned and them doing well. They're exactly who I thought they'd be right now.
I disagree with you on Leagues Cup. I know what you're saying, that it's important to everybody else to be humiliation for Major League Soccer. Do you really think it's that important to Inter-Miami, especially
with what you said,
which is... Which is where it falls in the schedule.
It's not important to Inter-Miami, you're right, but Inter-Miami is important to Major League Soccer. Let's not forget that. That's the thing. If one of the best things I've heard about Inter-Miami, they are the window to Major League Soccer for the rest of the world. Keep that in mind. For good and bad, they think that is Major League Soccer.
Yeah, and we saw it last year, too. They made it to the final. Everybody cared about Leagues Cup. We don't know how much people will care about Leagues Cup. If it's a repeat of last year, right, which is 2 MLS teams in the final, but one of them doesn't have Lionel Messi on the roster, Herc. If you don't have Messi in the Leagues Cup final or in Leagues Cup at all, or eliminated in a group phase or early on, we know it's going to take a lot of luster off that tournament. That's for sure.
I can't wait for Kansas City fans to dive into your mentions for calling them terrible. Unbelievable. How would you?
Kansas City fans?
Yeah,
or the team?
You just call their team terrible.
So. I mean... You can look at the table. No, is ninth in the West? Is that good?
Season just started.
They've won 2 of 8 games. I don't know. You tell me. Maybe I spoke out of turn. Oh, is 2 out of 8 good?
I gave you a chance to take it back.
No.
All right. Okay.
All right. Enough about Major League Soccer. Let's move on to Liga MX, where there were a few big games, but none bigger, of course, than the Clásico Regio. No. On Saturday, is that Tigres and Rayados squared off. This one played at the home of Rayados. Crazy game. Tigres up 3-2 late, when in the 10th minute of stoppage time on the Rayados corner, Germán Berterame makes it 3-3. The result leaving Rayados third in the table, Tigres 7th, with 2 games to go until Liguilla. Herc, who's to blame here? The ref for letting this game go so long, or Tigres themselves? For the late collapse.
I mean, I wouldn't blame the ref If we had more of a highlight package, you would see that there was a couple plays that maybe would have gone against Tigres, and that's a reality. So I would not blame the ref. I would blame Robert Dante Siboldi and the lack of finishing for Tigres. Listen, Tigres scores 40 seconds in, okay, the first minute of the game. They score the last minute of the first half and the first minute of the second half. That right there are three decisive goals. Boom, sucker punch your opponent in the face. But they get scored on in the last minute of possible play. Against your rivals in the game, you should have won, regardless of who had possession, regardless of who had opportunities, the way you hit them, how you hit them, and where you were. And then Robert Dante Siboldi takes off Gignac, who may have not been a guy who was dangerous in front of the net with shots, but was a guy that was instrumental in setting up two goals for Tigres. And then comes Nico Ibáñez, who I have been clamoring to get more time, who I have been saying is a man who can make a difference for Tigres. He had the chance to go up the fourth goal and the fifth goal, couldn't capitalize, couldn't finish. So if you're trying to blame the refs for not being able to close out a game in a game that you were up by multiple goals and should have put away, that's not something I am into. What I will say is, and I said it last week, Monterrey, Rayados, they're celebrating a draw. This is a team that doesn't know how to play clásicos. Doesn't know how to play against Tigres.
There's the Tigres man right there.
They've not beaten Tigres in four. They've only beaten them once in the last seven games, twice in the last 13. And every big moment they've had against Tigres, whether it's there at their house or in a Volcán, they've squandered. This was one of those where they almost squandered and they're left celebrating a draw.
Wow. All I know is for a second straight show, we're doing a What Happened to Tigres segment, which, you know, leaves me happier than a pig in mud. Speaking of happy, or maybe unhappy, did you see when Gignac was subbed off in the 58th minute? Did you see his reaction, his response to Siboldi?
Of course.
We've been inching up against it for a while. I feel like Tigres is losing some of their magic. Do you think that Gignac was frustrated just at being taken out, or do you think he's sensing that the team is losing some of what it was?
Well, I think he's frustrated for being taken out because it's...
That's it.
Well, yeah.
Isolated incident.
It's Rayados, Seb. It's Rayados. He's a Rayado killer. He wants to play in these big games. He got subbed out like minute 57. And it wasn't like he was playing bad. I thought he was doing very well. I mentioned he set up both goals. He set up two of the three goals on that night. In a game where there are games where you say, pull him, he should be pulled. This wasn't one of them, not at that moment. And it may be proved to be costly. Listen, Nico Ibáñez is a guy right now who doesn't have confidence. You could see it in the way he approached that fourth and fifth chance. It should have been goals. This game should have been over. It should have been an embarrassing moment for Rayados coming off a win against Messi and friends in their home stadium. It should have been a moment of humiliation for Rayados. And then it got left with a draw. I mean, listen, it's André Pierre Gignac. I don't blame him for being upset.
Herc, we finally got a high-scoring Clásico Regio. You know, my primo always asks you what to do in Clásico Regios. You always tell him, take the under. I think he stayed away from this one, but usually the under's a very safe play here. Obviously, it was 3-3. Speaking of wagering, my primo also has a futures bet on Tigres. To win the title. You know, he likes to spread his assets around, okay? So he's got one on America, he's got one on Tigres. How good should he feel about that Tigres bet? Because you know there's that little cash out button. Is it time to cash out now on Tigres?
Oh, man. There's just a team that has muscle memory when it comes to this type of moment. And they got to go all in on the league. They got no more CONCACAF Champions Cup. America still has CONCACAF Champions Cup. Pachuca still has CONCACAF Champions Cup. Pachuca, if they end up beating, if Pachuca end up making the play-in, if they get down to the play-in round of Liga MX, they have to choose literally between the CONCACAF Champions Cup versus America and the play-in. It's like a game and 13 hours later, another game type of deal for them, or 24 hours later, another game type of deal for them. That's a different scenario. There's some teams who are, for doesn't matter how good they are, they're going to be locked into some tricky situations. Tigres has to go all in. And I think Siboldi has to go all in. If Siboldi doesn't pull something out, at least a final, win it to guarantee
it.
Is
that it? Pull something out. Is it get to a final? Is that what Siboldi's going to have to do to keep his job?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think you can say anything if he got three straight finals. I mean, it'd be very difficult to pull the rung underneath a guy who got you to three straight finals. But if he gets to a final, he's staying. If not, Thigudis and all the money they have, they're itching to go young. They're itching to go European. They're itching to go something innovative. I could see them pulling the plug on the Siboldi project.
There you have it. All right. Rayados third in the table. Tigres seventh. America, as always, first after they hammered Toluca 5-1. Just thought you guys should know that in case you missed it. You got CONCACAF. Tigres goalie Nahuel Guzman, who, of course, missed the Clásico Regio with an injury. Still had an impact. He's caught here with a laser pointer. He's since apologized. Rayados have filed an official complaint with the Liga MX disciplinary committee. Herc, what do you think should be done here?
You know, you didn't mention America all show. We probably wouldn't have mentioned America all show in a game where they played 1-2 against Toluca, and we opened the A block with Mexican soccer with Tigres. I just wanted to remind you of right now where the epicenter of Mexican football is located.
Oh, please. They played the Clásico Regio in front of a much smaller crowd than America against Toluca. Please.
What are you talking about? Smaller crowd.
Please. Much smaller crowd. Look it up, baby.
Yeah, okay.
You want to make that bet?
All right. Everybody's talking about America and Toluca.
Everybody's talking about your boy doing this. Yeah. Class from Tigres.
Yeah, you know what's sad here? You know what's sad here is that Nahuel Guzman is a very good goalkeeper. He's a historic goalkeeper, not only for Tigres, but he's one of the best goalkeepers to ever set foot in Mexico, to ever play in Liga MX. And we're not going to go away talking about that today. We're not going to go away maybe talking about that at the end of his career. If you're a neutral or an anti, just not a fan of Tigres or Nahuel Guzman, you're going to talk about the Nahueladas. You're going to talk about the laser pointer. You're going to talk about the elbow he gave Mendes in the League's Cup final. You're going to talk about the red
card. The string coming out of his nose.
You're going to talk about the dancing. You're going to talk about all these antics.
Yes.
And you're going to forget about how good of a goalkeeper he is. And for somebody who knows him personally, what you get left with when you watch this is a guy that you think is not educated, you think is a clown, you think is a bully, and he is not that guy. One of the smartest, well-educated footballers, teammates that I've come across, but you're not going to get that from this. You're just adding to the folklore, to the legend of these Nahueladas. These Nahuel is not good for Mexican football, and it's sad because I know how good he is on and off the field. But things like this, he actually had this happen to him in a final. Tigres versus America, an actual America fan in his face. And if you recall the harsh words he had for the fan, he had for the situation. So this is sad.
Reportedly, he was doing it at the Rayados goalie, Andrada, right? That's what the allegation is here. So, I mean, not only is it bad, but to do it to another goalie, it's even worse. I'm with you with how good he is. I think Tigres might still be in the CONCACAF Champions Cup. And would probably be doing a lot better in league play if he was around. He is that difference maker. But this certainly seemed like a sign of desperation from a guy who is probably struggling, right? Being off the field and watching his team struggle as well. It's the Clásico Regio, one of many Clásicos across the world. El Clásico in Spain is on Sunday. And we got a watch party. Registration is open now for the event at Splitsville Bar in Anaheim, California. You can register over on the website. ESPN.com. If you can't get into the Splitsville event, just come to Downtown Disney in Disneyland. We'll be hanging out there with a watch party as well.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured.
It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
To the Premier League, where Gio Reyna got his first Premier League start since joining Nottingham Forest on loan from Dortmund back in January. It came in the club's 2-2 draw with Wolves. Reyna had an assist, as you see it here, off a corner kick to Morgan Gibbs-White for the header. He played 71 minutes at right wing, actually, on the far right side of that 4-2-3-1 setup for Forest. Herc, been a long time coming. How excited should we be about Gio Reyna's first Premier League start?
Calma. But with that said, you should be excited. You should be a little moved to get you out of your seat. Like, okay, there's some life in Gio Reyna in the Nottingham Forest situation. I know, Sebi, you may already have some Nuno Espirito Santo quotes about what he said about Gio.
So no, go ahead.
No, I'll let you go for that. I'll talk about what I saw on the field. Mm-hmm. I saw a player, even though he was playing on the right, that spiritually is always central. That always somehow found a way to impact the game centrally, and not that they were better for it. Early in the first half, 25th minute or so, it's a turnover, and he has a very clean look on goal, probably should have done better on. That could have been a very important moment for him, but he's being dangerous. In the second half, again, centrally, plays a very good ball to Neco Williams, and Neco Williams, who has a sloppy touch and not a great finish, could have potentially scored a goal there. And then finally gets his name on a goal sheet or assist sheet, if you will, with a corner to Morgan Gibbs-White, who he does very well. There's his corner. And by the way, which got me thinking, seeing him in this game and his dead ball possibilities. He's got to be the guy, the dead ball specialist with the U.S. men's national team. I don't want to see anybody else besides Giovanni Reyna take a corner kick for the U.S. men's national team. But this was a very positive outing for Gio Reyna in a big opportunity.
Yeah, the quote here is, or at least the back end of it is, he did okay. I mean, there's a lot to it. He played good. He gave us good possession. He had good situations, da-da-da-da. But the end isn't super flattering, right? He did okay. I think maybe something there is lost in translation.
I knew you would bring up that quote.
Look, I was working the ESPN FC shift on Saturday morning. So when I saw Gio in the starting lineup, I was excited, right? I was like, okay, great. You know, what a moment to get a start here. This was a huge game for Forest. Had things gone wrong for them in this game, some other results, they could have been in the relegation zone with five games to go, which basically means you're going down. So I thought, what a sign of confidence here from Nuno to give him the start. Then you look at it, you find out it's Anthony Elanga out with a minor knock. He's probably not going to be out all that long, which is why we see Gio not at his number 10 spot, but instead out there on the right wing. I thought he was good. There was some really bright moments in transition, which is key to playing with Forest. Like, you got to be able to get the ball with space, move it forward. The finishing touch was missing a little bit. As you mentioned, there was a couple opportunities there, but he got into some really good spots. Look at that heat map. I mean, he's in the opposition area. He's around it. He's getting tons of touches. So lots to be feeling good about. Was it good enough to win a starting job? Probably not. Was it good enough to make me feel like Forest is the long-term home for him? Still no.
But was it, what you saw with the Morgan Gibbs-White and Gio Reyna partnership enough for you to say, I'd like to see a little bit more of that? Because that was probably the doubt that we had going in. Where would he fit in with Morgan Gibbs-White being in the picture, right? Being in the scenario. Well, they can coexist. If anything, they kind of look for each other. Two guys that play off each other. So I was left with a positive feeling out of that.
For sure. Interesting to see kind of what Nuno does the rest of the way. Again, five games to go. Right now, Forest just above the drop zone. Let's see if Gio Reyna can help them stay up in the Premier League. Let's run it back with some of the other performances from around Europe. We'll start with Leon Bailey. What a season he's having. Got a goal, his ninth of the campaign, as Aston Villa beat Arsenal to throw the Premier League title race into total chaos.
Good evening. That's what Leon Bailey's got to say. Listen, you don't got to sell me on his season. I've been saying for a while, and it's not even a doubt in my mind. It's the best CONCACAF season today. The best player in CONCACAF having a season today is Leon Bailey.
2-0, the final score in that game. Aston Villa having a season as well. Right now, fourth in the Premier League, 3 points ahead of fifth place Spurs. Could Leon Bailey and Villa be headed to the Champions League next season? What a story it would be for the Jamaican international and company. Over in Serie A, Yunus Musa with his second Serie A assist of the season in a 3-3 draw, Herc, against Sassuolo.
Yeah, he's not a guy that gets a ton of goals or assists. That's not where he impacts the game. And he's not gotten a ton of starts or a lot of playing time as of late, so this is crucial for him.
He got the start in this one. Christian Pulisic came in off the bench, which is good news for U.S. men's national team fans. Of course, AC Milan will be playing Roma in the Europa League on Thursday. To the Eredivisie, Malik Tillman in the Herc called it category with his seventh Eredivisie goal of the season as PSV won 6-0 over Vitesse.
Oh, there's his assist.
That's the assist. He had a goal and an assist.
Yeah, it's been that type of season for Malik Tillman. I don't know why. I had a feeling you watch the kid play at Rangers, and he's goal dangerous. This is an attacking league. If they got some time, he gets some minutes, he was going to do damage. Between the players that were at disposal, Dest, Serginho, Chuki, Pepe. Yeah, I took it.
Maybe not the right video there, but you get the point. Malik Tillman had himself a good game. Chucky Lozano, this is from that game against Vitesse. Look at Serginho Dest. He was involved in Malik Tillman's goal, and he's also involved here to help set up Chucky Lozano for what Herc is his sixth league goal of the season.
Yeah, six goals, a far cry from the back-to-back 17-goal seasons, but it starts with one. He's got to get himself into a rhythm, get more confidence. He's not been at that confidence for quite some time, but a goal nonetheless.
El Chucky Lozano, El Chucky Lozano, who we know, by the way, is very close with Serginho Dest. Great reporting there from Tom Hamilton on our PSV special about a month ago. Speaking of special, how about this weekend coming up here on ESPN Plus? On Saturday, we got Manchester City against Chelsea in the FA Cup. Then on Sunday, we got Coventry City, Haji Wright against Manchester United in the FA Cup. Boy, a couple of good semifinals there. In the Bundesliga, we got Dortmund against the new champs, Bayer Leverkusen. They're going to be celebrating. And of course, Sunday, El Clásico, Real Madrid against Barcelona. Coverage starting at 3 p.m. Eastern time.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
The 2024 NWSL regular season is underway.
I wanted to just see it. I wanted to be here, be a part of it.
What a strike! Those fans are going absolutely crazy.
Match day 4 of 26 came and went this weekend across the NWSL. Washington Spirit, Orlando Pride, North Carolina, Angel City, Bay FC all in the win column. A couple ties in there as well. Racing Louisville and San Diego Wave playing out a 0-0. Gotham FC and the KC Current playing to a 1-1 tie. Speaking of that Gotham FC-KC Current game, let's welcome into the show someone who was there, our very own Ali Krieger. Ali, tell us a little bit about why you were at the Gotham FC. I think it has something to do with jewelry. Is that correct?
It does. We got our bling. We got our bling last night.
Let's see it. Let's see it.
Yes, it was amazing. I'll hold it up here.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Beautiful.
Yeah, we were so excited. I mean, it was such a monumental day. They unveiled, you know, the championship banner. And the fans were there to support. I went a little bit ahead of the game just to hang out with some of the fans and take some photos and connect with them, or reconnect with them, I should say. And Eli was there, obviously, and it was It was such an amazing night. Some of the basketball players were there, which was such a thrill for us, and having their support. That was the banner. Obviously a really exciting game. And then afterwards, we all received our rings, and even the staff. It just was a nostalgia type feeling, because that championship win was so incredible, and you can't really put it into words, but just finally receiving a ring to really represent that year and that moment for us was truly, truly incredible.
Producer Beto, did you hear that? Eli was there. We're on a first name basis now with Eli Manning. Look at that. Allie Krieger hanging out with all sorts of cool people when she's not here on Football America. So let's get to the game of the week, Allie, because there was a great one between Bay FC and Seattle Reign. This game, an instant classic, man. Bay FC, I know they're new, but win or lose, they keep on delivering, at least from an entertainment factor. We'll pick this one up in the first half, 27th minute, after a beautiful buildup. Reign going up 1-0 here on the own goal. Kayla Sharples with the unlucky touch, Allie.
Yeah, it's really difficult, those balls coming across so quickly. That's why, you know, wide players, you know, try to play balls that with that such pace across the goal frame, because as defenders running back towards your own goal, it's difficult to clear.
Kayla Sharples would go on to redeem herself early in the second half, making it 1-1 there. 58th minute, Bay FC going to go up 2-1. How about this blast from Alex Loera?
I mean, the technical ability you have to have, and just how you have to focus on hitting it in the right spot at the right timing on the right little bounce. That was truly, truly remarkable. It's probably going to be up for one of the goals of the year.
Deep into the second half, Bethany Balser here makes it 2-2.
Yeah, this was a great buildup from Seattle. Good first touch there. Obviously a miss. I think that was from Anderson. Unfortunately, just had whiffed the ball, didn't make good contact, and they really took advantage of their chance.
4 minutes later, the unluckiest of touches here for Alana Cook after Joelle Anderson takes a shot, and it's 3-2 Bay FC.
Yeah, I mean, this is unfortunate. That's obviously, you know, she definitely didn't mean for that to happen, and that's very rare coming from her. So that was really good for Bay FC to get that touch and go up 3-2 in that moment.
Veronica Latsko would score this goal in the 89th, but it was ruled offside. Laura Harvey, after the match, incensed. She definitely thought it was onside. All right, Allie, what's the bigger surprise coming out of that game? The fact that Seattle's struggling so much, that's now 3 losses in a row, or the fact that Bay FC so early in their expansion campaign really seemed to be finding their feet?
I mean, I think a little bit of both. Seattle is surprising. Obviously, they lost, you know, some key players, especially in midfield last season to, you know, my previous team in Gotham FC. And so I can tell that, you know, having those, you know, having to fill those holes and those new players kind of stepping up in that position, that could just take some more time. Yes, it's still the beginning, but for Seattle Reign, for, you know, a team that was in the final last year and has always been one of the teams to try to beat every season, it's really surprising that they're starting off the way that they are. I know that it's only going to take a win to really get that momentum going for them, and hopefully that starts, you know, this upcoming weekend. But Bay FC, wow, they've been really impressive. I know they're only 2-2 in the season, but they have allowed, you know, against Houston and obviously DC, those losses late in the game, and now, you know, proving this weekend that their mentality has shifted, their motivation and drive to want to succeed and to continue to play this offensive attacking, you know, minded football, I think is really impressive, even when you're tied and you're wanting to get points out of this. I think it was impressive towards the end of the game. They still had that willingness to want to get forward and to attack. And I think, you know, sometimes it can be a bit scary, just like, you know, the coach Montoya had mentioned, you know, some fans and supporters and even coaches on his bench might be a little bit nervous that they play so attacking minded. But obviously in this game, it really helped them. And, you know, they got the 3 points. And ultimately, I think they can just only build off of this. And they've been impressive because they're a new franchise. And this doesn't really happen that often. It usually takes, you know, at least a season or two to really get your feet underneath of you. You know, you're playing with new players. You have a new staff, you have a new organization. So it's very, very impressive the way that they've been performing and starting the season.
Yeah, this was their second win, but their first at home, which is always very important for an expansion franchise. You got to get those fans engaged and get them happy early on. Let's talk player of the week. Allie, who are you going with here? There were some very good performances across the league. I'm curious to see who you picked out.
Well, my choice was Ashley Sanchez. I think for North Carolina Courage, the Portland game Friday night was actually really, really enjoyable to watch for me. I think North Carolina has never shied away from that same style of play that they've been implementing for the longest time since I can remember. It's so difficult to play against and to go to, you know, Cary and play in the stadium with their fans. And I think just for her, not wanting to leave DC clearly, kind of being surprised of the trade, and then having to go into a new squad with a new mentality, a new style, new players, and to really perform these first, you know, few weeks of the season to the best of her ability, and to not allow that trade to really, not steer her towards success. I think that is, for a player like that and the experience that she has, and she's still young to me, it's been impressive to watch. And the way she connects with the players, the way she gets into the attack, her ability to create chances, her skill set, she's just so technical and she's smart. The vision that she has, I mean, she's really impressed me these past few games, and it's only going to get better because it's only the beginning of the season. But to perform like that against a Portland Thorn team and being a new player into the squad, so to speak, I really value her. And I think that she's such a great pickup for them.
I wonder what it could mean for her national team chances. Was left off the She Believes Cup roster, wasn't on the Gold Cup roster, but we know she's been around that squad plenty. So maybe continued good play in the league could lead to a call-up with the national team. We know the Olympics are coming up soon. My player of the week, I'm going old school here. Allie, I'm going Marta, okay? Because I don't know how many more of these we're going to get. But what a game for her. She scored the only goal in the 1-0 victory for Orlando over Utah on Friday night. You know, Marta scores a lot of goals, but this was a big one for Orlando. It was their first win of the season. But to give you an idea how kind of slammed the standings are, it moves them all the way up to fifth. They're one of just three unbeaten teams left. So massive for the club. She's still getting it done at 38 years old. This was her second goal of the season. Remember, she scored a late one against Angel City as well. And Allie, what I love the most about this is it was with the right foot. Are you kidding me? Marta had the right foot? Where's she been hiding it all these years?
No, and I saw it often in training when I played for the Pride with her. I mean, I was in awe half the time watching her training. I was like, oh gosh, I actually have to defend because she was just so incredible to play with. And also just her skill set too is remarkable. And I would just find myself just kind of like watching her and just being like in awe about, just the style that she plays and the confidence. So I agree with you. I think she was tremendous. And obviously she's so great for the Pride and leading that team this weekend to success.
I don't know if we got it in the replay, but she started that play with a no-look pass. So, I mean, just vintage Marta there for Orlando as they beat Utah on Friday night. We got some news, Allie, out of the National Women's Soccer League that's very, very interesting, and it comes out of Houston. Mexican international Maria Sanchez, who just signed what was at the time a record-breaking contract with the Houston Dash, has requested a trade. Let's credit Jeff Kasouf. He was reporting this over at ESPN.com. Now, the NWSL trade and transfer window closes midnight Eastern time on Friday. Allie, this seems crazy. What do you make of the situation?
Yeah, obviously, money isn't everything. You have to be happy both on and off the field. More importantly, on the field with your teammates, and you want to win and you want to succeed. And we don't really know, obviously, what's going on, maybe personally or anything off the field. But on the field, I really haven't seen the Maria Sanchez that we've seen in previous years. It just doesn't seem to, from the outside looking in, that she's happy, that she's having fun, she's enjoying her football. So that has a lot to do with it. I mean, you're young, you're talented, you're going to the Olympics. You want to impress, you want to play well, you want to play with good players. And I just think, you know, she doesn't look like she's actually enjoying herself and is happy there either. So I don't necessarily know what could be going on, but you want to put yourself in a situation where you're going to be successful. And if she's unhappy, I don't know the relationship that she has with the coaching staff or the players, you know, you never really know unless you're physically in the environment and have a better understanding day in and day out. So from our perspective, or at least from my perspective and my opinion, I just feel like she's not playing the same as she has in previous years. And maybe that has a lot to do with it. Maybe she's just not enjoying it, not having fun, and wants to change and wants to be, you know, in a team that maybe she feels, you know, more value or more appreciation, and maybe that can set her up for more success.
You're right that we don't know what's happened, but we do know this, Allie. She was on this show right after signing that contract, and she came across as genuinely happy to be in Houston. So whatever's happened, it feels like it's happened in the last couple months. Like, things have fallen off. And I've said it before on this show, I was the first play-by-play voice for the Houston Dash. I got a lot of love for that city and for that fan base. But Allie, they just celebrated 10 years. And this situation feels to me like kind of a microcosm of what the Houston Dash have been through their first decade, which is you do something exciting, you take a step forward, and then eventually you take kind of two steps back. And Houston's a great soccer market. The Dash fans that exist are great. I mean, they're really diehard loyal. But I think we're seeing, Allie, here one of the perils of like MLS co-ownership. You know, the Houston Dash don't seem like they're the number one priority. And I don't think it's ever really felt like that. And at some point, they've got to be, because we can look at Maria Sanchez just signing the contract and say, what's up with her? But there's a lot more evidence that there's something going on with the Houston Dash. They've had at least three coaches fired in the last 5-6 years over misconduct. There's a lot of worrying stuff happening around Houston. So I'm very, very curious, Allie, to see how all this plays out. But let's see what happens in the coming weeks, because that deadline, as we told you, it's only a few days away. Let's get to the top goals of the weekend. We've only got three, Allie, but they are three spectacular finishes that we've weeded out from the last few days of NWSL play. Let's start number three, Tyler Lucey. This was 5 minutes into that North Carolina-Portland game. How about that finish?
It was amazing. Just the to be able to make contact on a ball that's coming with such pace. Obviously, this is why Ashley was my player of the week, because she was just involved in every opportunity that North Carolina had. And just, I was happy for Lucy against her old team. She made great contact and put this ball away, which really gave them confidence for the rest of the game.
We'd already seen that goal. We've already seen this one as well, but it's worth a second look. Alex Loetta, Bay FC.
I mean, that was just unreal. I even think her teammates were shook. Everybody in the stadium just got on their feet. You could just hear it. The environment just erupted. That goal will definitely be up for goal of the season. I guarantee it. She just hit that so well, and I'm sure that felt really good.
Number one, Washington against the aforementioned Houston Dash. Brittany Radcliffe on her left foot.
I mean, this is, obviously, she had so much space to decide where she wanted to finish. I think the center back, there was maybe some miscommunication there, but no one steps to her. So all she has to do is place it. Yes, that definitely takes talent, that definitely takes skill, and technical ability to do that, to wrap it around the goalkeeper. That's not easy. But in this situation, Houston really gave her that time and that space to kind of pick and choose where she wanted to go. And fortunately, she did well with it.
2 minutes later, Croy Bethune, a player you've talked about a lot on this show, scored a goal after an 11-pass buildup. The Washington Spirit, baby, already playing that tiki-taka. Look out for when my team truly gets going. There she is, Allie Krieger. Allie, as always, great to have you with us here on Football Americas. We'll see you soon.
Thank you. So good to be with you. Bye.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
Herc, let's turn our attention back overseas. Wrexham have earned promotion for a second straight season after beating Forest Green 6-0 on Saturday. That clinches them one of three automatic promotion spots from League Two up to League One, which is, of course, the third tier in the English football system. Remember, they were fifth tier playing non-league football when purchased by Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney back in 2020. Herc, your thoughts on the latest success for Wrexham, which we know has a huge U.S. following.
Massive following. Let's be honest. This following wouldn't happen without promotion or relegation. That's the whole kind of, you know, story here is pro-rel. But we've got to also recognize that this pro-rel, at the rate it's happening for Wrexham, doesn't happen unless they have the owners who they have. Mm-hmm. Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds. Ryan Reynolds, a massive TV star, guys worth billions, companies. Rob McElhenney, what he's doing right now, the docuseries they are doing that sheds light on the story that's made it extremely popular here in the United States. This is a pro-rel story, yes. But don't be confused. These stories aren't everyday stories. Teams don't just go up that quickly. And the teams that do, or that have in the past, are the ones that are funded and backed with multi-billion dollar corporations, the Red Bulls of the world, if you will. We've seen that happen. Great story. And they're increasing the spotlight for the game in the country of the United States. Absolutely. And I hope they make it to the championship. I really do. I really want to see Rob McElhenney. I want to see Ryan Reynolds as owners in the championship and in hopefully the Premier League. But this isn't a Cinderella story. It's a great story of what pro-rel is, but it isn't a Cinderella story.
There is an example, Herc, quite recently of a team doing something somewhat similar for those who say it's impossible. Luton Town, who of course is in the Premier League, maybe going back down soon, 6 years ago were in League Two, right? So it can be done. To me, this is a great story of American / North American soccer ownership, Herc, which we don't have a lot of, certainly not a lot of high profile stories. I feel like most of the American owner abroad stories are pretty negative. Here's a good one. Yeah. So kudos to these guys for going in and doing it right. It is, I mean, amazing what they've done. They bought this club, Herc, for $2.5 million. I mean, that's nothing. And who knows what it's worth now. I think one thing about that number that's interesting, these guys bought in at $2.5 million. Think about what that number is for Major League Soccer. $500 million. Now, Ryan Reynolds, not poor. Rob McElhenney's not poor. But even those guys, Herc, get excluded from the American system that makes you pay $500 million just to have a crack at joining the billionaire club in MLS and having a team. Think about not just all the money that's going overseas, Herc. Think about all the talent, all the storylines that are going overseas. Think about our Ryan Reynolds, Rob McElhenney-owned team here in the United States. We are missing out so much. Wow. Because of the way things are done here, and nobody wants to acknowledge it.
Well, the way things were done here not too long ago allowed for Chivas USA to exist at what, 6 or 11 million, and then Toronto FC to exist at 12 million. So they could go in for a piece if they wanted to, just the price was too high for them, and they saw a great opportunity that made sense for them and do it at their rate and their way. Listen, man, it's a great story. It's a great scenario they have going on, but these aren't everyday realities of a pro-rel. I mean, the Saarbrückens of the world, that type of deal when they make a Pokal run, like those are the types of teams that you would consider Cinderella stories and you want to root for on these runs. Not that you don't want to root for Wrexham. The lens they give us into that world is absolutely tremendous and they're doing a great job of it. I just think it's a different story, a different model, but you're absolutely right. They saw good business. They saw good business and they're taking advantage of good business.
And you said promotion relegation is a huge part of the story. Yeah. It's also a huge reason for the investment.
Of course.
Right? Because that possibility is there, these guys invested and many other people invest as well. When you don't have that pathway, when you don't have that opportunity, you're shutting the door to everybody else. And I think that's kind of what we see here. Credit to Wrexham, but let's not watch it, applaud it, and pretend like it couldn't work here. You see those scenes? You see how they celebrated after Forest Green? You don't want somebody in West Virginia or Idaho to have that, Herc? You're telling me American soccer doesn't need it?
I don't want anybody in West Virginia to have that. The rest of the U.S. can have that.
Boo you and your anti-West Virginia ways, dude. Our neighbors here in the Mid-Atlantic. Shout out to to West Virginia and the value of an open system. Speaking of an open system, we do have something open here in the United States. It is, of course, the US Open Cup third round going down this week. That's where the 16 USL championship teams enter. One of those 16 is the Oakland Roots. They're going to face off against El Farolito, the very famous amateur side that is, of course, sponsored by a San Francisco area taqueria. They've already beaten two pro teams so far in the Cup, beating Portland Timbers 2 in the first round, following that up by beating Central Valley Fuego out of USL League 1 in the second round. They are the darlings of the U.S. Open Cup, El Farolito SC out of San Francisco, and we're joined right now by their manager, Santiago Lopez, who, if I have this right, is joining us from his car on the way to training. Is that correct, Santiago?
That's great. Thank you for having me.
Let's go. All right. Hopefully we don't throw off the preparations too much. Again, the game Tuesday night against Oakland Roots. And want to talk all about the game and kind of what's happening currently with this team. But there's so much history with this club. So we know that the restaurant's involved. Give us the backstory here on kind of how the restaurant becomes a soccer club.
1983, Salvador Lopez started a small taqueria in the Mission, and it started growing little by little. He was a big fan of El Cruz Azul in Mexico. He moved to the Mexico City in the 70s. He ended up experiencing those great times in Estadio Azteca. And he was always a fan of soccer, and then he started to create his own group of soccer players and team, and he entered the San Francisco Soccer League in 85, and they got promoted all the way to the Premier Division, got to compete against Concordia, Scots, the Greek Americans, great clubs before the MLS started. And they made a great Open Cup run. They won in 93. The club still maintained itself in the San Francisco League. MLS started, kind of deteriorated, level kind of went down. And I started taking over the team 14 years ago. We joined the NPSL, and we've won the conference 3 times already. We've qualified to the Open Cup. This is our 5th time since. And now we're trying to get, try to make another cup set tomorrow night.
Santi, talk to me about the 1993 Open Cup win. You guys winning the Open Cup. I mean, I don't know how old you were, how much you remember, but I'm sure as a coach, you have to use that as motivation with your players. And if so, what are you telling them about that run?
Yeah, I got to travel with the team. I was 8 years old. I remember just great bonds, great communication, great chemistry with everybody, great understanding inside and outside the field. I remember the people in the equipment, the staff, everybody got along so well. And then just those type of things I really did stick to me. And the things that I do mention to my groups now, in the past and the future is, if results are not there, then, you know, things could happen inside the pitch. We all have to stay together. And that's the most important thing, that we enter as a family and we leave as a family.
Santiago, where's that trophy at? Do you still have it?
Yeah, it's in El Farolito Bar. It's next to the original El Farolito on 24th and Mission. They have pool tables. We have TV screens, and we have a lot of trophies there from NPSL and the San Francisco League and other tournaments. The pool team, we also have a very competitive billiards team. So there's a lot of silverware there.
All right, let's go, man. We got to make... We got to make a trip to San Francisco,
yes,
Herc.
We
That's
do.
On the next Football Americas on the road. So you were mentioning the team that won it in 1993 as Club Deportivo Mexico. And I was looking at kind of the backstory there. You had some guys on that team that had played professionally in Liga MX with clubs like Atlas and other teams kind of around Central America. It was a really talented team. But if we look at this year's group, like, where are you recruiting the players for this year's team? Any connections to the restaurant? Like, any of your bus boys, your wingers as well?
No, unfortunately, it's not like before. There used to be, for example, our starting goalkeeper in the 93 Cup, Guillermo Valadez. He had first division experience with Atlas. Jose Angulo, he played a couple of friendly games with the Colombian national team, and they were all here in California. They took advantage of the situation, and they got a group together, and they ended up working with the taquerias as well. But now it's changed a lot. I go out to these tournaments, all different types of Sunday league leagues, And I recruit players and I invite them. And if it matches with the timing, the travel of the 2 times a week training, then it all works out. I've been working with this group, like about 70% of the group for the past 3 years. So they know me very well. They know the game model that I'm trying to implement, and they understand, and now they have the experience of this type of intensity, because it's very different than US soccer intensity compared to Latin America. So they've been adapting slowly, and this is for sure the first time you're getting here, but not the last.
Santi, you've got some professional experience of your own, but the majority of these guys have never been in that type of setting. What's that like for them to beat a professional team? Because you've not only done it once, you've done it twice this season. What do you see in these kids when they're able to pull something off like that?
Yeah, I think my main focus and what I try to communicate to them is to maintain their focus on their individual task and maintain our focus on our strategy. And then slowly the results will come in. And the results have been defeating these teams. But at the moment before and at the moment of the game, we're just focusing on our strategy, and it's worked out so far.
I wonder, you know, what your reaction was. As you mentioned, this is not your first rodeo in a U.S. Open Cup. When you heard the news about MLS teams wanting to pull out, obviously there are going to be some MLS teams later in the tournament, but, you know, somebody who appreciates surely the history of the Open Cup, you know, what would it mean for you guys to get a shot, not just against pros, as you already have, but against that first division? That'd be special, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would be great. Before this year, we would have more of the possibility of playing a MLS club, but now with there's less teams, I guess it just motivates even more the grassroots to prepare, because they have a chance to cup set these other professional squads and eventually make these type of news. But I think overall it's good for the MLS Next Pro players to develop and experience these situations and scenarios to play against an ex-professional or an older squad, and it'll definitely help them out. And then as well as the grassroots, they're going to prepare harder, because I know they know that the first round is going to be against a professional side. So I think there's some positives, some negatives. Of course, the tradition, it's always hard to maintain, but as long as the Open Cup is still alive and we have all the a little bit of the all the divisions in the country, I think that's the most important thing.
Santi, you guys want an opportunity to face a Major League Soccer opponent, but so do the Oakland Roots. This is a tricky matchup. I mean, you could almost say it's a local rivalry that could be established in here. That's got to be tricky as a coach. You know, how do you get your guys? Wait, what's the game plan here to get them focused for that game, to get them going for that game strategically?
Yeah, our main focus is to not change our mindset and our game plan. We've been practicing since early January, keeping the same game model, and we've implemented it against the Timbers too and Central Valley Fuego, and it's worked out so far because we maintain with that intensity that this country could give, and these young players could perform with such high pace, counterattack, physicality in the air. So well, our plan is to keep that along, and we're very motivated to keep being alive in this tournament. And that's why I always tell these players is that we're fighting for survival.
All right, there it is. El Farolito taking on Oakland Roots in the third round of the U.S. Open Cup tomorrow night out there in Northern California. Santiago Lopez, thanks so much for the time. And we got a lot of love for Oakland Roots here on this show, but we're rooting for El Farolito on Tuesday night.
There
all right,
go,
thanks
man.
For being with us.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me. It's a great honor.
El Farolito against Oakland Roots, one of five third-round games in the Open Cup on Tuesday. Charlotte Independence against Rhode Island. That's Charlotte out of USL League One against Rhode Island out of USL Championship. Another USL League One versus USL Championship matchup between Louisville City and Greenville. Detroit City against Michigan Stars. Michigan Stars out of NISA, one of two NISA teams left in the competition. Then we got New Mexico United against Lubbock. Lubbock, one of the amateur teams there out of the NPSL. The magic of the Open Cup. 5 games Tuesday, 11 on Wednesday. Herc, oh, makes me wish for the days of the Open Cup wraparound show.
Did you ever play in the Open Cup?
I played in like a Maryland qualifier for the Open Cup when I was 17.
All right.
But no, we were far from qualifying for the Open Cup proper.
Yeah.
In the qualifiers, yeah, as our youth team would play in the I forget what the Maryland Open Cup was called, but it was part of the process. But no, no, not, maybe I'll be one of these guys that comes out of retirement next year for the Open Cup. You know,
right, still time. There's still time.
There's always still time. There's always still time. There is quite a bit of time until our next show on Thursday back here on ESPN Plus. We'll be covering plenty of action from the midweek, of course, Champions League, Europa League. And the Open Cup. We love the Open Cup here on Football America. He's Herc. I'm Seb. Thanks for watching. We'll see you right back here on Thursday.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia, Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.